They told him this cross-genre of science and horror wouldn't sell in a book, but on today's SOP number 133, we're talking to Scott Sigler, and he used the power of podcasting and word of mouth to take his book to number 2 at Amazon.com time and time again.
It's the School of Podcasting's morning announcements. Here's Dave Jackson.
All right, welcome to the show. As mentioned, Scott Sigler, Mr. Earthcore, Mr. Ancestor, Mr. Infected today. Wait to hear this interview. You know what? I went to edit this interview and I kept going, no, that's good information. Okay, that's good information. Good stuff. Let's get the contact information out of the way, shall we? I'm Dave Jackson, first of all. Thank you very much for tuning in. Our website, schoolofpodcasting.com. Everything we talk about, you can find it at shownotes.schoolofpodcasting.com. Our phone number is toll-free, courtesy of podcastvoicemail.com. That's 888-563-3228. Are you using one of those free services? Do you realize that if you don't get a phone call in 30 days, you might lose your voicemail? And remember, when you announce your voicemail, that's in your podcast forever. So don't worry about losing your podcast voicemail. Go to podcastvoicemail.com. And let's see, we did that. Website, me, email, schoolofpodcasting@gmail.com. Thank you very much for tuning in on the show. A couple of quick notes here before we get to Scott's interview. It's about 20 minutes long, but very interesting stuff. We talk about, getting in the mindset of why you would give away your book for free and how that has, his mindset of that, how it's working. His latest book, again, number 2 at Amazon. Number 2. Awesome stuff. But last week I talked about return on investment. Last week I was definitely in the mood of I'm not going to Vegas. This week I'm kind of, I probably will go to Vegas. And that will continue between now and Vegas until I probably finally just buy a plane ticket. So for that, there is PodCamp Ohio, though. That is June 28th. Did somebody say PodCamp Ohio? Hey, have you been thinking about putting your toe in the podcast pool? Then you need to come to PodCamp Ohio, June 28th. At Hilliard, Ohio, that's near Columbus, at the ITT Technical Institute. Now, the best thing is, it's a single-day event. None of this multiple-day, multiple-brain-drain stuff. It's from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Not too early, not too late. What are we going to be doing there? We're going to be providing multiple rooms with various topics where attendees can learn and discuss podcasting, new media, blogging, social networking, and other related topics. And you may be thinking, but I don't really have much of a budget to learn how to podcast. The best part, it's free. This is Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting.com, and if you already have a podcast, don't miss this free opportunity to come and brainstorm and network with your fellow podcasters. June 28th, PodCamp Ohio. For more information and to register today, go to podcampohio.com. All right, I thought I would talk a little bit about... In fact, let me do this. I'm going to turn off my noise gate because I almost have no noise. Okay, so of course somebody walks up the steps here. You might hear something there. My desktop, I've always explained how noisy that thing is. So here's a novel idea, Dave. Don't use it! That's right, I'm using the Zoom H4. Now, I'm a huge fan of the Zoom H2, even though I don't have one, for portable recordings. What I like about this is it has actual mic inputs. Now, the Zoom H2 recorder, which is about $200, the H4 about $300, the H4 has actual mic XLR inputs and quarter-inch inputs, where the H2 only has like a line input, which you could just take your tape out and get the cord from Radio Shack and do that. And so, yeah, my noisy computer is turned off right now. I've got my laptop running in case I need to look something up. And I'm going straight from my microphone into my mixer. Into my case, I'm using the Compressor Pro XLR from XL, excuse me, Behringer Composer Pro XL. It's $100. It's a noise gate compressor limiter de-esser. And it does what I want to do, which is it compresses me a smidge, as is there a compressor built into the H4, which is kind of cool. And for me, I was using it as a noise gate, but I almost don't need that now. And here's the other thing. I've said this before, and then we're going to get off that. I just want to let you know there is another way to podcast. If you say, well, I don't have a computer, you don't need one. You're going to need one to upload it, obviously, to your web host and things like that. But if you're a person that's on the go, you could actually use the Zoom H4, which is what I'm doing today. And that's the new rig. We're going to try that, see how that works. And really with that, I'm going to call it a day because it is kind of a long interview. This is with Scott Sigler. He is an author, and he's another great example of the power of podcasting. I've been dealing with musicians. I'm a musician myself, and I've seen how musicians are getting their music, you know, exposure on a global basis. And this is an example where Scott was the luckiest guy in the fact that he was the first person to put out his novel as a podcast. And he has used that and used it. And you're going to hear how he publicized his podcast. You're going to hear the mindset of giving your stuff away for free and how that actually works and why he's doing that. Some really great stuff. Everything is at scottsigler.com. And with that, here's our interview with Scott. On the Skype phone, joining us, the very first author to put out his book as a novel, Scott Sigler. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And boy, I got a lot of questions for you, so we'll try to just hammer right in these. But let's start off for anybody those four people that don't know who Scott Sigler is yet. Let's give us the story a little bit behind your first novel, Earth Core.
Well, Earth Core was the first novel I was trying to get done, you know, with publishers. And it got picked up by a subsidiary of AOL Time Warner back in 2001, and was supposed to be out in all the bookstores in 2002, mass market paperback. That imprint got shut down by AOL Time Warner because of the 9/11 recession. They basically cut everything that wasn't profitable, and my imprint wasn't profitable, so they just scrapped the whole imprint, which completely ended the deal. I mean, it was so bad that we couldn't even get anybody's attention at Time Warner just to get a letter that's saying we have the rights back to the book. So it took about 3 years to get the rights back to the book, which put us right about 2005. In the meantime, I'm trying to get other books published and couldn't get any. I was getting a lot of rejection letters and a lot of reads from the publishers, which was great. I mean, people were actually considering it, considering the works, but we couldn't get anything going. And I just had enough at that point. It had been about 9 years into the writing experiment of trying to become a published author, and then I discovered podcasting March 2005. Started to do searches for podcast novel because it seemed like a great way to deliver stories, just like the radio serials of the 40s and 50s. You know, you'd get an episodic treatment of the book episode every week, and you'd just subscribe and you'd get that. I couldn't find any. It took me a couple days to realize the reason I couldn't find any is because nobody had done it yet. And that's when I just kind of seized the day and figured out how to record and how to create an RSS feed and how to podcast. And I put out Earth Core. By the end of Earth Core, we had about 10,000 listeners. And then put out the second book, Ancestor. By the end of Ancestor, we had about 30,000 listeners, and it's maintained that level since then through across five novels.
And the beautiful thing of this is, the great thing of podcasting is that relationship that you've built with your listeners. I was actually on YouTube, and I see where your fans are actually making parody videos, like the "Leave Scott Sigler Alone." And I was like, yeah. Here's... So you've got a great relationship going on there with your fans, which is awesome. Now, because I just came back from a writer's workshop, and I was talking, were your ears burning? Because we were talking about you a lot. And the thing, for somebody who's worked so hard on a book, how hard was it for you to say, you know what, I'm going to give this away, the whole thing, for free?
It wasn't hard for me at all, even though I had a lot of pushback from my agent at the time, who was concerned it would compromise the audio rights, which in turn could... if somebody was on the fence with a book deal, could sabotage that, and that's what they thought. Right off the bat, I saw the potential of the technology and the fact that giving it away online was going to allow people, A, to get it, B, if they like it, they could then forward those links on to other people, you know, IM, email, even talking about it if they get together for a beer or whatnot, which gives me a chance for a pretty significant exponential increase of the brand name. And then in C is there's, depending on what estimate you're looking at, there's a billion people online. You know, and the online experience is still predominantly English-based. And here's this huge market of people that I could get something out to. Because it was free, they would try it. Because they could try it, you know, those two either working out, listen to it at work, listen to it on the commute. There was just... no restrictions in front of them finding out who I was and, you know, what kind of stuff I wrote, as opposed to the traditional, or even if you get the big book deal and hit the book in a store, 95% of the population still have to physically go to a bookstore, find your book, and breeze through it, you know, to decide if they're going to buy it. And that's a pain in the ass. And so giving it away online wasn't a problem. I knew that the publishers weren't going to be happy about that, and they were going to think that that screwed everything up. But what I was banking on was eventually the numbers were just going to weigh them down. Eventually I was going to be able to say, I've got X thousand people who listen to me every week. If I can get 10% of them to go buy a book, you're going to sell more books in the first week than you do with 90% of the books you put out. So there really wasn't any fear at all. I was pretty confident in the math on this from square one, and it's panned out. It's taken a little longer than I thought it would, but it has panned out.
Awesome, and that's a great point. I never thought of that. If you think about it, the thing you're trying to get people to do with your book cover and things like that at a bookstore is to get them to open it up and start to peek at it. So you're doing that, you know, through podcasting. You're saying, here, please peek at my book, and you know, and it's so. And then if people, and then you've got that relationship, so that when it does come out on paper, you can say, hey, how'd you like to do your friend a favor and go hit Amazon and buy my book? And your fans are so rabid that they have no problem putting out money for something that they just got for free.
So, and you also got to keep in mind that people who listen to the podcast are not the whole population. Every one of the people who listen to this for free, whether or not they'll buy the book, they all have social circles. And if they're influenced by the book and the book entertains them enough that they go talk about it, they'll go out and tell other people, and those other people may just go buy the book. So really what it becomes is free word-of-mouth advertising. You know, you're giving something to the reader, and like I said, you know, my ballpark number is 10%. The people who listen to the book, if I can get 10% to actually go buy a physical book, I'd say that's even a very aggressive number, because, people have only so much time and only so much money.
Right.
It's the exponential increase in the amount of people who have heard about you. So when a certain percentage of those people go into bookstores and see it, I remember my friend Bob talking about this book. That's just enough for them to pick it up and look through it. You know, you're just getting over the initial hurdle. I don't know about you, but I mean, I go into Borders and I get stressed out. I'm like, I'm going to die before I can read one half of 1% of all these books if I read a book a day for the rest of my life. You know, there's massive competition in the bookstore just to get someone to see your book, to pick it up. And now what's different with us now compared to, you know, 30 years ago when Stephen King comes out with Carrie, it's a completely different world. There's three channels. There's the weekly movie. You get maybe one movie a week at your movie complex. There wasn't even complexes back then. We're talking about most towns had one theater.
Right.
So you've got one movie option. You've got three TV channels and newspapers and magazines, and that's it. That was all you had back then. It was a much different ball game to get a writer to blow up, because it was a primary source of entertainment. And now we're competing against 500 channels on cable, competing against video games, and we're competing against the internet. You know, so there's just infinitely more entertainment choices for people to have, and getting something for free, to come back to that, is that's how you compete. The only way you're going to be able to compete with it is to get people's attention, is to earn their business, and you earn their business by giving them your product, and then they can decide if they like you or not.
Right. To me, I have a mental picture of throwing a stone into a lake. You know, you throw one stone, you get a bunch of ripples. You throw 10 stones, you get a bunch of ripples. So you're basically getting the ripples going so that you can hopefully create a tsunami of people coming back to bite your book. That's awesome, or buy your book. How did you get the word out about your podcast? Because it's one thing, it's like, okay, I'm going to turn this into a podcast. It's not really so much a I will podcast it and they will come kind of thing. You have to get the word out. How did you go about doing that?
Well, I got a marketing background. So the two things that struck me when I first put out Earth Core was, I can get a basic press release approach to this, and then if I can get online publications or sites to carry it, that's going to have a link to my website, or I was able to get them to put a link to the first episode. So it was the instant gratification. Someone stumbles across on a website, happens to be reading about it, and there's a button there that says, click to listen to the first episode. They can do that, and that's when I got a chance to get my hooks in them with the story. So I put out a press release when it first came out, because I was like, hey, this is the first podcast-only novel. That got a moderate amount of coverage. Then it got covered in a couple of different podcasts, like Adam Curry's Daily Source Code was a key one. And then when I hit 5,000 listeners, I put out a second press release. And that number carried a little bit more weight where online bloggers were like, wow, this has got something going if he actually does have 5,000 listeners. And so they covered it under that guy. Like, well, we don't know if this guy's telling the truth or not, but here's what he's saying. And then at 10,000, I put out another one. So it's really just the basics. It's not something that's reproducible now if people do it, because there are hundreds of podcast novels. So it's really now people want to do it. It's a matter of finding that particular niche. You know, and that particular niche would be if your book features, it's a thriller about mountain climbers. You know, you still have the opportunity to go contact every site that has something to do with mountain climbers. And, you know, then they will pick you up because the content is of specific interest to their readership. So there's still ways to get around it. I was really lucky to be one of the early ones doing it, where just the whole concept of a podcast novel itself was newsworthy.
Now, what tools are you using to both create your podcast and then be, I know Earthcore is at podiobooks.com. Are there any other sites that you're using?
No, just my site, scottsigler.com.
Okay.
And then after I'm done with the live run of the book, I put everything over on podiobooks.com. The show is hosted by Podshow.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, for example, you know, answer.podshow.com. But that strategy hasn't worked out very well. There's just too much going on their pages and their network for anybody to actually find anything pertaining to me. So it's really just scottsigler.com for the general news, and all the feeds are going through there. And then the archive books are put in podiobooks.com. The main tool I use is a site called FeedBurner, FeedBurner.com.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it lets me redirect my feeds. So I can be uploading episodes to all my different pod show sites and then just put those URLs in at scottsigler.com. But for the customer to get the content, it's all the same thing. It's feeds.feedburner.com/scottsigler.
There you go.
So no matter where I put my stuff up, eventually it all gets redirected into that one funnel, if you will. So I can change servers, I can change blogs, I can change software, and there's no interruption to the customer and then getting your story. And that's turned out to be very important, because the first big mistake I made was when I finished Earthcore, I then created a new feed for Ancestor for the second book and lost 75% of my subscribers right out of the gate. It just caused massive confusion amongst them. So at that point I learned it's just you have to have one source and you can't change that.
There you go. Now, when you're writing a book, is it ever in the back of your mind that this is eventually going to be a podcast? Does that affect how you write, or do you just write the book and then turn it into a podcast later?
I did that with the first five.
Mm-hmm.
Just wrote and then turned a podcast later. With the new one I'm doing right now, Nocturnal, there is some consideration going on that it is a podcast while I'm editing it. I really couldn't say exactly what the change is, other than now I'm getting so much feedback from the audience that can influence the amount of screen time a character gets if they really like a particular character. And I've had secondary characters blow up and primary characters because the audience likes them so much. For the most part, there's no difference with a print novel and a podcast novel. People should be writing with the end goal in mind that they're going to put out a print book that people are going to buy. Because there's little to no money in podcasting it, and your product still has to have longevity in the shelf life of being a print novel.
When you say you're getting feedback from your fans, are you actually putting out the podcast in the middle of writing the book, so they're actually giving feedback while you're writing the next chapter, or is it just a case where they're giving you feedback after the book has come out and you're using this character again in another book?
Well, it's all of the above. I've podcasted Earthcore, Ancestor, and Infected, and then got feedback from the audience and incorporated some of that feedback into the rewrite that would then go into print. I've rewritten these books 5, 6, 7 times each before they ever get to the podcast phase. Nocturnal, I've only done a rough draft, and now I'm podcasting it from the rough draft. So it's a little bit more aggressive in fielding in the input from the audience. But the thing that you got to keep in mind, though, is that it's important for people to write the full novel and edit the crap out of it and rewrite the crap out of it and put in the wrench time you need to make a quality product. Because now, for example, Nocturnal, which I didn't have a chance to put in that level of time to polish it,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting corrections, ideas from myself and from the audience, too, that I can't implement. Because once you podcast an episode, you can't go back and then tell your readers, well, okay, here's another character I didn't put in, but I'll put in the rewrite, so just pretend I gave you this. You know, that would totally destroy everything.
Right.
So there's some changes you can make, but for the most part, I've done both now. I've done really fully edited, vetted novels as a podcast, and I'm doing one that was just a rough draft, and I'd much rather have the vetted novel have that done. But it could be pertaining to the genre, too. I write thriller, horror stuff, mm-hmm. and the thriller scripts, the thriller plots have to be, you know, multiple plot threads, multiple characters, tightly crafted, everything ties into each other,
right.
come to a big finish. If you're writing a Western, it might not be the same thing. You might be able to write that as you go. Or a detective novel, you might be able to write that as you go.
Absolutely. Yeah, and your latest book that you just released on April 1st is Infected. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
I describe Infected as The Exorcist, if it was written by Michael Crichton, using hard science instead of the supernatural. And instead of a 10-year-old little girl, you're dealing with a 6'5", 250-pound ex-linebacker with a really bad attitude. So it's the main character is Perry Dossey, and he is a ex-football player who didn't make the NFL. And he's working as a computer support tech, and one day he just wakes up with these 7 tiny rashes on his body. And then as the book progresses, those rashes grow into him and grow into something rather significant and evil. Something with a master plan that involves terraforming Perry's body. They're going to use his own body's reproductive process and cell biology to change him into something that better suits them. So he's sort of like a planet that's being colonized. And then, from halfway point on to the climax, it's the battle of can Perry get these things out of him one at a time before it's too late.
Now, how long does it take to write a book? Like from start to finish.
Normally, it takes me about 2 years. You know, with a working life and a family life and all that stuff. I mean, it takes 2 years to get through the thing. And since I started podcasting 3 years ago, my writing has been really in the crapper. That's the other thing that people have to consider when you podcast, especially when you're starting out. You're looking at 5 to 8 hours an episode if you want to do it right. Some people just read, and like Cory Doctorow, who's a very very well established author, he'll just read it, and if you flub something up, he just keeps going, he finishes, he posts the file, boom, dead, done, you know? He doesn't really need to podcast to generate an audience. It's just a value add for his existing fan base, whereas I go through, and everything I flub, I go back and retake, I edit, I add sound effects where necessary, I add character voices, big intros and whatnot, and it's also kind of a newscast to let people know what's going on in the career. It takes me 5 to 8 hours to do an episode.
Wow.
So people who are starting out, you have to understand that if you want to go down this podcasting route, you need to commit three or four years to it, where you're going to see anything happen. You need to commit the time, and that time is going to come away from your writing budget. And it's not just the podcasting time, it's the marketing time, too. It's getting on the social networks, interacting with people, finding people to trade promos with. You know, it's a part-time job. To get to the level I've got to and get the book deal that I got, it's full-on part-time job, and it's not going to happen quickly.
Yeah, you got to have some patience. And you mentioned things like social networking. I know you have videos on YouTube. What do you have any favorite social networks that you use more than others? I mean, do you use Facebook or MySpace or, you know?
I use Facebook and MySpace. I'm not. Those are more of a checklist to me. It's mm-hmm. like I would get stressed out if I wasn't on there and doing something with it. And I think it does have some impact. But what I've gone through lately is that, you know, ScottFigure.com has become its own social networking site. So I've tried to elevate the concept of a homepage to a really fully featured media center with links to all the videos, links to all the podcasts. I mean, that's where people, if people really get into me, that's where they go to find out all the other stuff and where all the other stories are. I'm trying to make that a weekly hub of people's entertainment experience. They're going to go to my site on Monday, or they're going to go to my site on Tuesday, see what's new. And what's more than that, a lot of people just sign up for automatic updates on it. So every time I post something, they get some kind of, they get an email, they get something like that to say there's something new here. Now, you know, 95% of the people there are going to show up once a week, if not once every other week. But there's a certain group of hardcore fans there constantly. So you know, they can be in chat rooms, they can be in forums. I've got a wiki for all my stories so people can go add comments. people can write about the characters and blow them out. It's pretty much got a lot of bells and whistles. So Facebook, MySpace, Bebo, those are all great. It's the real value to those is being able to put up your multimedia links, be it video or audio, mm-hmm. so people find you there. They are instantly exposed to your fiction, and you got a chance to lock them in as customers. But for me, it's primarily my site.
Very cool. And again, you can find everything over at scottsigler.com. Scott, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Very interesting insights into the world of being an author and using podcasts to get the word out there. And best of luck. Everybody go check out every book that we talked about, Earthcore, Ancestor, Infected, as well as The Rookie and many other books. Everything's over there at scottsigler.com. Go check it out. And thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate being here.
All right, that's the wonderful Don't Be Fooled by Cheap Imitations, Scott Sigler. Want to thank Scott very much. Scott was on his book tour, and actually that was, in case you're wondering, Skype to a phone, in this case his cell phone, and that was the only phone he had available. So what I did to that was I went into Sony SoundForge, which is what I use for editing files, and I pulled out some of the middle, the kind of stuff that makes you sound like this, which is what a phone does, and I boosted the bass and a little bit of the high end to kind of give it a little warmer quality. So you can, that's what you can do if you have a phone interview. Obviously, it still sounds like he's on the phone, but I did kind of tweak it just a bit for those who wonder, how do I do stuff on the show? If you'd like to see how I do stuff, simply go to schoolofpodcasting.com. It's $20 a month right now, not for long, and that will be changing very soon, and you can actually see our step-by-step tutorials where you actually see me create a podcast. We've got hundreds of resources, so if you're looking for things like voiceover talent and pod-safe music and production music and things like that, we've got lots of resources. And, of course, our weekly live roundtable. And that is turning out to be more and more. What's great about that, I've never said I'm the be-all, end-all of podcasting. I'm just a pretty good ringleader, and we find out so much stuff at those roundtables from people that are going, oh, that's a good idea, but did you try this? So check us out, schoolofpodcasting.com. And until we meet again, class dismissed.